James.
Hey.
Oh, that was like, what is that noise? The sprinklers came on. Scary shit. Hi, Kimmy.
Oh my God. I just need someone to like smack my face.
I know, right?
Lexi.
Literally.
Welcome to Talk Like a Mother Parenting Autism Podcast. We are Jen, Kim, Rachel, and Jamie. Take a seat at our table as we share with hope, humor, and honesty.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us. This is Series 24, Parenting Autism, Episode 2. We're talking about anxiety for all. It is quite common for autistic children and adults to be diagnosed with anxiety. In fact, 50 to 80% of people on the spectrum are also diagnosed with an anxiety disorder. Anxiety can look quite different in autistic individuals because a lot of times it's caused by or triggered by things that are specific to them being autistic. We'll talk a bit about that as well. The sources of anxiety are sort of like overlooked a lot of times in families like ours, at least outside of our homes, I feel like, because sometimes it's dismissed as being silly or unreasonable, but really it's not. And we, of course, know that it's so real and it can be so debilitating for our kids. So I thought I would just sort of start with what anxiety looks like in our houses. Hey, ladies.
Hi, Rachel. Hi, James.
Hey.
Jen, do you want to talk about Kaya's anxiety?
Yeah, Kaya, I started noticing it, or I guess realized what it was, or I guess a doctor told me around 4, which was interesting because she was so young.
Yeah.
And by no means am I minimizing autism. And I've heard this from other people. Sometimes I feel like her anxiety is harder to manage than her
their autisms.
Autism, right?
Yeah.
For her, it comes out in, I always say she goes dark. She does a lot of vocal stimming, like a lot of vocal stimming, and just very dark, grumpy overall, just wants to be left alone, retreats to her room, very
I
quiet.
See in Kaya that same thing as Celie has in the sense of like needing to control a certain thing. Otherwise it's going to begin to activate her, like play, for instance, or how you respond to something that she's expecting you to say a certain way. I feel like that's also rooted in that like anxious response.
That's another thing that happens is she'll script nonstop when she's anxious and she'll just sort of become lost in her own.
Yeah.
A lot harder to reach when she's anxious because she shuts down essentially when she's really anxious. So yeah, that's how it looks in our house.
What about for you, Jane?
I was just saying to the ladies before we started that Jesse hasn't been diagnosed with anxiety yet. We're on a very long wait list for the developmental pediatrician.
Welcome to autism.
Yeah, he just got diagnosed with ADHD. So we're kind of going, I feel like, through the autism steps where it's like, okay, get the autism diagnosis, get the ADHD. But I know he has anxiety. I feel like it's just glaringly obvious. And like Jen said, it's almost like we're managing the anxiety, which is propelled by the autism or vice versa. But with him, it's a lot of like looping, getting stuck on one thing over and over again. And it's not, sometimes it's because it's like an interest. And I think that's more the autism. But then when it's like an anxious thing. So today, for example, he had his checkup. I wasn't sure whether or not he was supposed to get a shot. So I couldn't confirm to him either way. But the moment I mentioned it yesterday, because it's like that thing, I have to give him warning to like prepare for it, but I can't go too far out. But he was obsessed with like, he's going to get a shot and he could not let it go. He would be crying one moment. He kept pulling on his sleeves to cover up his arms, like for all day today, you know, like when he knew he was going, he's fine with the doctor otherwise, but it's things like that where it's like, it gets in his mind and like nothing can distract him from it. Nothing. He, that control thing you guys were talking about. So like, even like games and stuff, he can't stand to like lose things, or he doesn't like drawing or art and stuff because he can't do it perfectly. So he just won't even try, or he'll get upset when he does try. And like games are a good example. Like he had a meltdown at a group thing where a bunch of boys his age were playing games and he wasn't even losing the game. He had so much anxiety about losing the game that he went into like a meltdown mode, was panicking, was screaming, crying, yelling at people because he's so caught up in this. So I feel like that autistic trait of kind of like obsession mixed with the anxiety really makes it hard, really hard to manage for us. And just, I mean, going to school, everything, it's like we have to talk it through. We have to give warnings. We have to like let him know what's coming. But like I said, not too far ahead. And then Jesse also has had a few panic attacks. So the first time he had a panic attack, I didn't know what a panic attack was. I knew what one was, but I never had had one. But he like shut down. He was like kind of crying, but he wasn't really breathing. And he was just like, I kind of like, I don't know. It's like freaking out, but like not moving. Like, and was not, and we were like, breathe, breathe, breathe. It was the scariest thing. Now I've learned like to get his body moving and all this stuff, but it was like he was frozen. So I don't know, that those are the things we deal with. It's really hard. I don't think it's all those things are mixed with other comorbidities, but I feel like anxiety runs through everything that we deal with.
I always say it's the uninvited guest in our home.
Kim, what about poor Alyssa?
So I'm going to kind of go off like what Jamie said too with the autism. Like for us, I feel like the autism and the anxiety just kind of are twined together. Like it's very hard to pick it apart to say, this is the autism, this is the anxiety. Hers really just goes hand in hand. It's like the chicken or the egg. Like it's certain things are from the autism where she's very rigid and she's very controlling and she doesn't like her routine disrupted. But like when those things happen, the anxiety kicks in. And once the anxiety kicks in, it's very hard to bring her back. So it's kind of like a trigger situation where it's not like these things run co-current next to each other. Like hers are just blended as one, yes. I feel. She is diagnosed with generalized anxiety, but that's a diagnosis that she hasn't had for a lot of years. Like she just wasn't like formally diagnosed with it, but was always like in with her. Like she has a sleep disorder. She has anxiety. I believe she has OCD. She's not formally diagnosed with it. Psychologists really think it's her autism, not her OCD. But it like all these symptoms and stuff just really kind of like blend together. With Alyssa like gaining more understanding and more awareness of her environment and in the words and of things happening, her anxiety has definitely like picked up even more so than before, because it's like she's understanding part of what's being said. Mm-hmm. And then she gets very anxious. She only might hear one word, understand one word. And that one word will just like trigger her and get her like all worked up and anxious. And her face gets hot when she gets anxiety. And then she gets anxious because her face is hot and she's touching her face. And then like she's getting more and more anxious because she doesn't understand why.
It's such a snowball.
That's something I can visually see and I know that it's happening, but I know myself from having anxiety and I have like four different types of anxiety, which is fun. So much of my anxiety is internal. You wouldn't know that I was having it. So it's like, if her heart is racing, if she's feeling like she can't breathe, if her stomach hurts, like if her brain is racing to the point that she can't think straight, which are all things that happen to me, you don't see that. I can't see that. You know what I mean? Obviously, if I was like hugging her or something, I could feel her heart racing. But like, I can see like when she gets hot, because that's a very physical symptom. And I can just imagine how it probably feels to her when her heart's racing, when her brain's racing, like really just completely takes over, and it makes it that much harder to bring her back down. Now, the past couple of years, she's developed some, I refer them to as OCD tendencies, where she has to, like, literally, you can't move things. You can't, my husband can't bring sometimes a sweatshirt into the bedroom because that sweatshirt wasn't in the bedroom the past couple of weeks. So when he goes to bring that, she goes crazy. The car keys have to be put on the table. She'll find them in somebody's pocket and she'll take them out of Neil's pocket and put them on the table. They have to mm-hmm. be on the table or she'll lose her mind. Like it's not even like, so it's like all these things that are just really triggering to her. And she has certain ways of trying to cope with things. Like sometimes she'll go and she'll move things on the table. She'll dump out water bottles. She'll peel labels. She'll like kind of do these things that I feel like just kind of like help like kind of calm her down. My sister has OCD and she's kind of explained some of her symptoms to me that like help me kind of understand Alyssa more, where it's like she's like certain things, it's almost like physically like you can't, like your brain will not let it go. Like once you're zeroed into that thing, it has to be fixed. So it's like sometimes Alyssa's things can't be fixed though, because A, we don't know what she's fixating on because she can't mm-hmm. speak, so she can't necessarily tell us, or it's something obscure that like has to be done, so like it can't be fixed. She even now goes out and cleans the car every night, takes everything, and she has like, I think they're kind of coping mechanisms to help her, but one day she woke up and the car wasn't here, and then she freaked out. It's really hard sometimes to be like, okay, is this anxiety? Is this autism? Yeah. Is this her being controlling? But like the physical things and all the things that happen kind of like end up being the same. I obviously have a greater understanding for anxiety because I lived through that. I understand like when she gets to a certain point, like she cannot bring herself down.
Yeah.
But then other times, like you just kind of have to let her ride it out, which is also very hard. I always say the A in autism stands for anxiety. I would imagine, I don't have the percentages. If it's not 100% of people that are autistic have anxiety, it's like 99%. Because I just think the nature of autism is going to cause anxiety.
50 to 80% of people on the spectrum are diagnosed with anxiety. Now that's diagnosed. We know that that's not the whole picture, right?
Yeah, right. Because I know for a fact Alyssa has OCD and she's not diagnosed with it. Like, and she wasn't diagnosed with anxiety until I think 22.
Well, it's just kind of imagine living in a world that's literally built for everyone else but you. Like,
yeah.
Of course, it's going to be freaking scary. Like, you see those videos. I don't know how real or true they are. This is how an autistic person sees the world. Hell yeah, I would have anxiety. Like,
the way sounds and lights and all these things are just so overwhelming. Like, that in itself is just going to cause anxiety. Okay. So it's like, I think the nature of autism, everything that autism does to like your brain basically is like causing the same thing that anxiety causes. It's like that same chemical kind of reaction, like how
and
you were just
body
saying,
response, like full body response.
Yeah. And it's that fight or flight. I mean, it's intense, and anxiety can be very intense. I don't think people that haven't gone through it themselves can really understand like how much it can like just really take over your brain. Like you just, sometimes it's like so hard. And for like somebody like Alyssa who can't even talk, I can't even imagine like what my brain does, like in her brain, that cannot be like reassured in the same way. That can't be like, she can't talk. I mean, obviously maybe she can talk herself down. Maybe in her mind she can talk. Like it's like, you don't really know what's going on inside her head, but I feel like she just gets very confused by probably like the reactions that her body is having. And once those reactions start, it's like, I mean, it's just so hard to like.
I feel like anxiety is the catalyst that sets the pace for Celie. Like, if we're going to have a tailspin and she's pretty anxious because of X, Y, and Z, then it's going to go a lot faster, further. Like, we are going to avalanche about that snow.
What about you, Rach? Like, what does it look like with Celie?
For us, Celie has been diagnosed with a generalized anxiety disorder. She is, like, you could say that she has the three A's, anxiety, autism, and ADHD. And those three are so closely linked, like the ladies have said. For Celie, it's hard to say what is the antecedent. I mean, if it's her anxious mind, if it's like this rigidity that's coming from autism, or it's some other parts of her multiple diagnoses. But for us, the most anxiety-inducing sort of scenario for Celie is if there's an upcoming transition or an unexpected change to the routine or schedule. And that doesn't even need to be real. It's just what she thinks. For instance, today, Mondays are supposed to be this. It was cloudy. There's a whole, I mean, it's just like, she has this whole set of criteria to make it through stuff. And even if that's rock, and those are often unspoken expectations. She also gets super anxious if someone's being unclear with her or she's not getting like complete information. Either if you're setting an expectation or you're even validating her, congratulating her, if she's not picking up what you're laying down, tailspin. She is triggered, like lots of our kids, by lots of sensory stimulation. But also if she doesn't have her allotted time for a special interest or for whatever she's doing. But most of all, and interestingly for us, if she perceives that someone is seeing through her masks or seeing through her masking, she will retreat. She also kind of reacts that way if she has unintentionally offended someone or broken a rule that she didn't know about. It's just like she can't meet the expectations, and she's got like this edge of perfectionism. So it might not be your perfect or standard of perfect, but it's her set expectation. And so I don't know. There's a lot for Celie that can like trigger her. And I feel like it's all rooted in her mental health stuff, the stuff that goes on inside of her that's not necessarily attributed to something that's happening externally. It's interesting to me, given the fact that we know our kids so well, like we're not autism experts, but we're Alyssa and Celie and Jesse and Kaya experts, you know? So it's interesting to me to kind of get down to like the sort of brochure aspects of a certain this or that. And for anxiety, it's so validating to hear kind of the stuff that I was researching today. I learned anxiety can be best described by a feeling that when something is happening that triggers anxiety, a part of your nervous system called the sympathetic nervous system is activated. You think that sympathetic is like some nice experience. Really, it's not. This is not awesome. When the sympathetic nervous system, or otherwise known as your fight or flight response, gets activated, it thinks that you're in danger. So sometimes that can be helpful. Like if you're getting honked at in the car because you're putting your mascara on the way to work, your fight or flight response might jolt you into like steering correctly. But when your anxiety is triggering this response, it could be because you think, for me anyway, it could be because Celie just woke up like a hellcat and I know we have to do pants, socks, shoes, all these other things that'll trigger her. So I start to get anxious long before we do or don't have the battle about the shoes. She's living through that very same experience because she knows that when we wake up before it's school day, it's going to be these steps. For her, her pupils are black. I don't know. There's this whole physical response that tells me that that's what it is, not just a rough moment, which is cool. Being that I'm a Celie expert, I can sort of see these things acting like her little behaviors are so different. Like her hands tighten, everything is just different.
Sometimes I see the physical signs before anything is happening, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh shoot.
Well, and even like, you know, for many of our kids, like flapping or movement is so a part of their nature, but I can see when those things are like ticked up, when there is, you know, she's pacing and she's digging her right shoulder into the wall and we have to move furniture so that she can go behind it. She's not moving her arm off the wall. Like these are significant, you know, indicators that it's like Santa's coming in 15 days, 14 days, 13 days, 12 days, whatever.
But you know, I've shifted things because like, I don't know at what point we were talking about this, but like her, for her anxiety, if I give her too much notice to something, I fry her. If I don't give her enough, like Jamie was kind of talking about Jesse's shot, like
yeah,
kind of either way, it's like,
it's a gamble. Know,
I sprung the ballet on her over Christmas. And that was, I think, worse than a buildup of going. It's like, you just can't win the overall anxiety of the actual event.
Remember how crazy Alyssa was like the weeks up leading up to the wedding, which like, I didn't realize that was what it was, but I think it was just all the talk and all the excitement and all the different trigger words that were like just being thrown around. And she just like picked up on something, like wasn't necessarily that she understood what a wedding was to be like anxious about that specific event, but she knew that there was some kind of something coming. Mm-hmm. And she was amped up for probably about 4 weeks. And then once the wedding passed, it's like she basically went back to normal. But like sleep can do the same thing. Like when she just, her sleep is just really, really bad. And I notice the same thing for myself. I can get a lot more anxious when I'm like sleep deprived, you know? So it's just like all these things that like can just, they're just so sensitive to, you know? And sometimes you don't even, like even Celie and Jesse have the language, but they can't always tell you like what's causing their angst, you know?
Right. And the more anxious she is, the less likely it is that she'll be able to express any of it. Like the worse she's ratcheted up, the less output she can put effort into. I mean, it's just like a formula stuck in her.
Well, and I think even for Jesse, even though he has language, it's at a much younger level. But I think in general, I even think us as adults, sometimes we don't even realize what we're anxious about. And so like the shot today, he knew he didn't want that. He knew he was going to, I mean, I don't even know if he understands he's anxious, but he knew he was pissed about that. But there's other things like coming up, or like we're going on a trip, like things he's excited for, but he displaces that anxiety in other things because he's just anxious and he needs to get it out. And like a little bit what you were talking about, Rachel, it's like Jesse stims definitely by running, by vocal stimming, by doing these, playing with his mouth and stuff a lot. That definitely ticks up in a different way because sometimes he's stimming because he's happy. And then sometimes he's stimming because he's anxious, and you know when it's one or the other because it's not the same.
There's like a freedom to a stim to balance. There is like a short circuit that's happening inside those anxious stims. I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then what happens is I feel like Alyssa, she gets so on edge that you can like, you could almost feel it. And then everything that happens just sets her off. So it's like, we're like, if she's not having anxiety, if she's not amped up like that and something happens, like, she might get a little upset, but she can get over it very quickly. But when the anxiety is heightened, there's just
no moving it,
no getting over anything, and everything is an issue.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I like Rachel was saying, I mean, I know the socks are going to be an issue. She has to think about socks on her heels. And if they don't go on the first time exactly the way they need to be, socks are off. And I don't even argue about it. Like, and you know, if you put that bra on back, sports bra on backwards, and you got to twist it around, that's going to be an issue. If you can't get the arms and the sleeve the first time, like, that's going to be an issue. So it's like, even I know, like, she gets so anxious when I brush her hair, that the feeling of brushing her hair really bothers her sensory wise. It takes everything in her to stay, hold it together during her hair. But she vocal stims, she scripts nonstop, and it's the same script.
Yeah.
It's the same thing when I'm doing her hair. Yeah, it's tough.
I feel like our kids all, meaning the four of us, our kids all sort of do this like ritualistic situation when it's something. Like it's always this buildup. It's always this result. Whether it goes all the way or it kind of just ebbs and flows a bit, it's still that.
Well, and kind of what Kimmy was saying with the no-win situation, and not to go back to the shot again, but when it was time for him to get the shot after the end of his checkup, you know, the doctor leaves and the nurse is going to come in with the stuff. And I'm like trying to talk him through it. It's going to be an ordeal. It's not going to be easy. I'm going to have to hold him. I'm going to have to try to convince the nurse just to like put it in and be done. But, you know, they want him to be relaxed also, whatever. Well, the nurse walks in empty handed just with like our paperwork. And she's like, I'm so sorry. We're out of the shot. Someone used the last one today. And then he starts panicking and she leaves the room. He was just panicking about getting the shot. And that was going to be hard. It was going to be the harder of the two scenarios. But he starts freaking out because in his head, he was supposed to get this shot. So you would think immediately he would be relieved as a kid being like, oh, I don't have to do that. Woohoo. But what happens in his mind is like, I was supposed to get this. I didn't get it. I didn't get the shot. And now, you know, something's going wrong.
What I mean about these expectations, and they're her own. It isn't standard. I mean, let's be clear. It is what Celie wants, you know? I'm going to read to you guys a little bit about each of these six different anxiety disorders. I will say, if you're listening along with us, guys, and you feel like, oh, that's not what I thought anxiety was, I'm just going to give it like a little briefie on each of these. And also, there's many, many, many types of anxiety. We're going to talk about six. If you ask the Google, there's 20 types. If you ask the Google a different way, there's six. If you want to talk about it in a different way, there's 10. So certainly this is just sort of a briefie overview so that you guys can get a sense of what it may look like. The anxiety disorders that I'm going to talk about today are a little bit more like the neurotypical description, but I think you'll hear in each of these, all the different markers for the spectrum as well. It's so interesting. I mean, and also the crux of the whole conundrum, right? Ooh, horcrux is what comes to mind, Harry Potter fan. Okay, so for generalized anxiety disorder, it usually involves this persistent feeling of anxiety or dread, which interferes with daily life. This can go on, like the frequency can be for months, if not years. So this is not like a hard day or like I'm fixing to get a report card kind of anxiety. This is like significant. The feelings of restlessness or being wound up or on edge are fairly typical. You're easily fatigued and you are likely to have trouble sleeping, much more difficulty falling asleep and also staying asleep, which is straight comedy as far as I
know. It's wild. It's like you're describing me, Rachel.
I know. This is all of us. You might have a headache. You have muscle aches, stomach aches, unexplained pains. And all of this, interestingly, is actually from your body's response to the fight and flight process. It is your muscles actually super trigger. So you could have all of these physical responses as well. And those are super real. I also think that our kids feel them, you know, talking about Alyssa feeling that like she gets purple because she's so red, or she rubs the small of her back because she's just pissed. It's like real. I mean, it's physically happening. Panic disorder, we discussed a little bit. It's interesting to know that the people with panic disorders often worry about when the next attack will happen, and they actively try to prevent future attacks by avoiding places, situations, or behaviors that they associate with their panic attacks. They can occur as frequently as several times a day or as rarely as a few times a year, and you can still have panic disorder. However, panic attacks, if you have panic attacks, it does not necessarily mean that you'll experience panic disorder, which is really something.
I had the beginning of a panic attack today because I was staring at the sun accidentally while I was trying to take a picture. And I literally, like, my body was, like, on fire. And then, so what happens, like, for me is, like, the second I stop, now I can recognize when it happens. It makes it so much easier to combat. But, like, I get these really strong physical symptoms, and I'm like, what is wrong with me? What is happening? And then I go into, like,
it's going to be a stroke. Oh, my God, it's a heart attack.
Like, I don't even know, like, I don't even have the thoughts, but my body physically reacts to the thoughts that I'm not consciously having. And then I'm like, oh, my God, I'm so hot. I'm like, did something happen to me?
Yes. So you just melted your whole body through your retina.
I had to put on cold the sink. And this is the daycare. These poor kids are probably like, what's happening? And I had to, like, just put my hands in the cold water to, like, bring the physical symptoms, like, out of my body. Yeah. And in my head, I'm like, you're fine. You're fine. This is anxiety, but it's very scary when you don't know that. Like, this has happened to me. Like, this happened to me in a store, and I, like, almost had to get an ambulance because it was like, I didn't. It's also like when you don't know what's happening and you get these sensations, it's like it really is so scary. Like, it's yeah. But yeah, it's like now I can talk myself out of it because I'm like, okay, this has happened many times and I'm still alive, so it's all right.
Kimmy, calm down. You're just turning purple from a panic attack. It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
You
it's
didn't
okay.
melt your retina.
I'm like, so I'm not ash. I'm not turning to ash. I'm fine. Yeah.
The hallmark feelings that Kimmy is talking about in regards to a panic disorder and the panic attack happening is often pounding or racing of the heart. You're actually physically sweating, trembling and tickling or tingling. You're tickling, people. So you're trembling or tingling sensations. You might have chest pains. You definitely are feeling this impending doom, or that you're out of control, or that you're so numb from it that you are just reacting, like Kim was explaining. It's fascinating.
I get extremely dizzy too from it when it happens to me.
Yeah, because I was reading this whole thing. You're physically, your blood goes, the oxygen, like there's something about like your body's physical response and it takes the blood out of your brain. So you get all like, whoa, like it's actually really happening because the blood goes to your muscles because it's contracting or something. Wow. Okay, the third type that we'll discuss tonight is social anxiety disorder. Now, this one in particular, the traits are so similar to that of autism trait. Social anxiety disorder is an intense, persistent fear of being watched or judged by others. For people with social anxiety disorder, the fear of social situations may feel so intense that it seems beyond their control. For some people, this fear may get in the way of doing work, attending school, or doing everyday things. People with social anxiety disorder may experience blushing, sweating, or trembling, pounding or racing heart, stomach aches, rigid body posturing, which is straight up Celie Flanagan. You can see it happen. Speaking in
I don't have this one.
Yes, no, you don't. or speaking with an overly soft voice, difficulty making eye contact or being around people that they don't know, feelings of self-consciousness or fear that people will judge them negatively. Yeah, that just sounds like a whole boatload of autism right there. Social anxiety disorder was previously called social phobia. People with social anxiety disorder have a general intense fear of and anxiety towards social and performance situations. They worry that actions or behaviors associated with their anxiety will be negatively evaluated by others, leading them to feel embarrassed. This worry often causes people with social anxiety to avoid social situations. Social anxiety disorder can be manifested in a range of situations within the workplace or school environment. The last two are pretty quick. Separation anxiety is often thought of as something that only happens for children. However, adults can be diagnosed with separation anxiety disorder as well. People with separation anxiety disorder fear being away from people that they're close to. They often worry that something bad might happen to their loved ones while they're not together, and this fear makes them avoid being alone or away from their loved ones. They may have bad dreams about being separated or feel unwell when separation is about to happen.
Or it makes you like uber controlling. Because I also have this, I think. I'm not diagnosed with it, but like
Neil called and told me that you do. This is one of yours.
I know, yeah.
The last is an interesting kind of profile for anxiety. And I have heard a lot of it for girls on the spectrum. Selective mutism is a somewhat rare disorder associated with anxiety. Selective mutism occurs when people fail to speak in specific social situations, despite having language skills. Selective mutism usually occurs before the age of 5 and is often associated with extreme shyness, fear of social embarrassment, compulsive traits, withdrawal, clingy behavior, and meltdown.
I wonder if I had that when I was a kid.
Some of these, Jamie, I'm like, triggers. I'm like, check it.
And a little kid, I can remember that we would be in certain situations and I was incredibly shy, but I would not speak. Like, if it, so that, I would talk at home, but I would
probably would like write all of that off, Jane, because like you've got all these siblings and like all this other stuff, you know? It says people diagnosed with this selective mutism are most likely to also be diagnosed with another anxiety disorder, whereas any of these others can exist together or separate. But this one specifically is like very common to be with generalized anxiety or another.
It's super interesting because so Lexi was not diagnosed. She was almost diagnosed with this because she did not speak in public, which like I did not realize because she always spoke at home. So like it didn't, like I didn't realize that until her aunt babysat her one day and was like, does she talk? And I was like, yeah, she talks. She talks a lot. And she's like, oh, she didn't say one word. And she was there for 3 hours. And I was like, oh, that's weird. And I had a job this time working at the YMCA, like in the babysitting room. And then I was watching and I realized she did not speak. She would come up and whisper in my ear. She wouldn't talk in front of people. And I'm like, oh, that's so weird, right? And then I brought it up to the doctors and they were just kind of, she's like, yeah. She's like, there is this thing called selective mutism, which she could have that. And they just kind of recommended like to like put her in preschool. And I got a job at a daycare, but like I was her teacher. So like it, you know, obviously helped, but time after time going to parent conferences, they're like, yeah, she really doesn't talk a lot. Like she would talk to the teacher, not the other kids. Mm-hmm. And even up into high school, she told me one day that they got a new student and they were like, yeah, this is Lexi. She's the girl who doesn't talk. And I'm like, Lexi, what do you mean you don't talk? And she goes, well, if someone talks to me, I'll answer them, but she will never talk to somebody first. Wow. And I'm like, but she talks so much at home. Like it's just
aunt or aunties.
Yeah. She's better. I feel like working at the daycare has helped her a lot because like she was kind of forced to talk to parents and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And she's come out of her shell a lot. And she doesn't for some reason have a need to talk to people. Which I always said, well, she's the youngest of 4.
Because her mom is in the room talking to everybody for her. She just has to listen.
Well, her also, she's the youngest of 4. So it's like, okay, well, she doesn't have that necessarily need to like interact with somebody because she gets a lot of that interaction at home. Her sister's only 2 years apart, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it's pretty interesting. And she has ADHD. She doesn't really have a lot of anxiety. I mean, I kind of consider that like sort of an anxiety, but like, she doesn't have anxiety, or like she doesn't even feel like she has anxiety. Like she doesn't get like real nervous about stuff like that. But
you know, there are certain risk factors for anxiety. We obviously know these. I'm having a genetic predisposition, right? Like if your mom has 5 different kinds of anxiety, it's not likely that you're going to come out scape-free. Like, so anxiety symptoms can be produced or aggravated by some physical health conditions such as thyroid problems or heart arrhythmia, caffeine or other substances and medications. But the risk factors for each type of anxiety disorder vary. The general risk factors include shyness or feeling distressed or nervous in new situations, especially throughout childhood, exposure to stressful and negative life situations or environmental events, and a history of anxiety or other mental disorders in biological relatives. Checkity, check, check.
Well, mine came out in pregnancy.
Yeah, when your body is in like an additional strain.
Like, I mean, also I was young, so like, but like I didn't have anxiety like, or like super shyness as a child. Mine really came out like, and it came out like full force when I was pregnant. So I don't know if it was like the hormonal part of it or what it was, but.
Mm-hmm. I look back at my childhood and I have anxiety. I've had anxiety my whole life. I was so shy and awkward my whole life. And really like in the last few years, I realized that I have anxiety. Then that I realized, oh, like not everyone stays up all night thinking about things. Like I literally haven't been diagnosed with anxiety because I'm too anxious to make an appointment to go to a doctor to talk about it. I'm not even kidding you. Like I need to go to the doctor really bad. I got my gynecologist appointment done the first time in 5 years. And I was so proud of myself for doing that one, but I haven't been to like a general doctor. I need to go to the dentist. Like I've learned that about myself probably the last like 5 years. I'm like, oh, that's what this is. And not everyone has it. And I'm really trying not to like push that on my kids.
It is so interesting to just have your frame of thought as the way that people are, or like the way that it should or shouldn't be, you know. I feel like for us, it's natural to make these accommodations to help our children to not have to navigate these things. And the goal for all of us is that hopefully if we can identify these things and help our kids, they can become a little bit more self-aware. They can have problem-solving techniques, whether it's like rubbing the small of her back or showing you, or, you know, like coming to you for help. And that as a family, for us, we have coping skills to be able to deal with the sources of anxiety. One of the coolest things that I learned in my recent treatment for my own mental health was a trick to bring down your fight and flight response. And I've used it on the daily since. I have to use it every day, so I'm not sure how great of a trick it is. But the premise is that it validates that thought that we've all said, that anxiety and excitement sort of feel the same. Your body has a very, very similar response. So if you are in the throes of anxiety, you know, because you have to put your kid's socks on soon, or because they're fixing to leave the door, or because the principal called, or whatever it is, if you can convince yourself that you are excited by repeating, "I'm excited, get excited, I'm excited, get excited," like three times, and do this like little chant inside, you can lip your mind to believing that you are excited, not anxious, and you fall from excited wicked quick and painlessly. You know, you're like, "Oh my God, I got the red Starburst right at the top," and you're so excited about it, and then it's over. But in panic, you're like, "Oh my God, I'm going to live like this for 10 more days." Yeah. My body keeps responding. If you trick yourself in, then you can fall quickly, which I can say has worked for me. And it's something that we do with Celie, you know, right when you can like stop a meltdown because of sarcasm, not the kind that we're going to throw tables and like do the stuff, but like, you know, if you can catch it early.
Her anxiety is debilitating for her. Yeah. Like it literally stops her in her tracks. You, like Rachel, you were reading off some of the statistics, and her doctor, like, he kind of feels at this point with all of the, her history of school, that like her anxiety sort of almost prevents her from being successful and going back, because she's so anxious of what that day is going to be. I walk such a tightrope not to trigger that anxiety. I know not to play music. I know not to sing unless I am authorized to by the young princess, not to hum. There are things that set her off that really trigger her anxiety. And well, so
even words she has, right, that you can't say.
Yes, trigger words. That's the part people really don't understand. It's like anxiety can crush our children.
Yeah.
Like I bought tickets to Sesame Street Live, and everyone's like, "Well, why aren't you giving them a turn for her birthday?" That's not to May 24th. Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
it's
no.
Only April.
No. Yeah.
We'd be done. Like she'd be fried before we even got there at the countdown to the sleeps.
That has been really something that I've been able, and I can see it in all of us, that we've been able to dial in the 5 years since discovering Celie's autism diagnosis in our house. It's like this line of prepping her and preparing her and telling her and getting her excitable about something.
Yes.
And absolutely driving yourself into the grave. Like, you know, how many things we tell her, how many things we say, like how many things we show her. When it's all working seamlessly, you could show her a YouTube video and set the tone. But what if you get there and that ride is broken? Or we didn't park in the parking spot of the YouTube video.
I called every day about the hotel. Is the slide working? The pool's working, right?
Because it just takes one experience of doing that.
And you're wrecked.
You just know. Yeah, yeah. You're just like, never again, never again. For Alyssa, like, you can't even prepare her, because the idea of even things that are enjoyable to her, like her trigger word is vacation. Like that is the most ridiculous trigger word I've ever heard in my life. Because if you even say the word, it gives her so much anxiety, because I think it's just a bunch of unknown stuff. Like where?
Yeah, it's a lot of change.
Who's going? Like, yeah. I don't want any part of this chaos, this bullshit that I know is going to happen, this Griswold, chaotic, like,
mess. My mom didn't make me stay an extra day.
Yeah, my mom's going to pack a 62-pound bag every effing time.
But she's fine, and she thrives on vacation. Like, either last time we went to Disney, it's like she slept. She slept through the night, like, multiple days. She was so relaxed. It's the craziest thing that, like, the idea of a vacation triggers her, even if it's something she loves. She loves swimming. She loves roller coasters. She loves water slides. Like,
I mean, even you can't roll out a suitcase and that woman's ready to break your arms.
And it's funny because it's like when she understood less, she didn't get as triggered by these things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now that she understands, but it's like, I feel like she understands like halfway, which is like this weird like realm that like she's not fully understanding, but she's like, gets some of the concept. And so then she'll just shut it down because her biggest trigger is being confused. So once she feels confused or doesn't understand what's going on, that really causes such angst in her.
You can see that she shuts down because she's in that mode. Now you can't even compute more that could come in because you're just done.
Even on nothing like on the phone talking and just even say the word, she'll start yelling from the other room. It's like, like I might be like, oh, there's a girl. Oh, I have two people out on vacation this week. And she'll be like, no. Like, you know.
Like, I didn't say a word.
Well, it's so hard because it's like, it's embedded in you to prepare your children when your children have autism. That's what all the professionals tell you. You need to prepare them. You need to prepare them. She needs to understand what's coming. And like, yes, there is truth to that. But like Jen says, sometimes it's like this sweet spot of like, you can't tell them too far ahead.
I can't have a video calendar for her.
Oh my God, the calendars go to hell. They are
obsessed. If she visually sees that like Saturday is whatever, the obsession of the sleeps and amount of days and time before that Saturday event, you know, and I've been very open. I am clinically diagnosed with OCD. And I was just messaging with a friend whose son has it. I said, Rachel could actually tell you, I know what I'm going to do when my feet hit the ground. Yeah. Like I run it through my mind at night and it doesn't change. The moment my feet hit the ground, I have to make my bed. I cannot leave my room until my bed's made.
Going through those steps for you, Jen, in the night calms you to the place that you're like, oh, I can be in control and I'm going to be in control when I wake up. You know, like
can we all joke about like the amount of showers I take? That is actually part of my obsessive compulsive stuff.
Your compulsions, yeah.
My sink, my floors, my counters. I was explaining to my friend, my pillows have to be perfect. My blankets, like when I get up, nothing can be out of place. Mm-hmm. I literally cannot fall asleep if that stuff's not done. Like I literally cannot go to bed. I rage. And then I get back in bed and then I have to plan out my morning again. And it's the same thing I do every single morning. Nothing changes. And it's that you can't move past it thing. For kids, especially with autism, because it heightens that not being able to let go of it, you know?
Yeah, and they can't have that control. Like you can control all those things in your day. They can't. Well, and I was going to say about the calendar thing. So Jesse, in two instances at his center, his therapy center and at school, they have like a general calendar, and especially at school, because he's in the autism room, but all the boys, his class this year is all boys, go to like different classes throughout the day. So it's like some can go to typical math, some can join in a PE. So they all have the schedule. He watches everyone else's schedule and he'll be like, why is this kid in here right now? They're not supposed to be here, or you're supposed to be doing this. Like he gets controlling of everyone's calendar, not even just his own. You know, obviously the teacher's like, I can't do this.
Well, it's like what happened with Alyssa a few weeks ago, and I'm not sure, I might have already mentioned this, but like she had an incident in the bathroom that like she got upset about. She wasn't getting over this little hump, and they were on their way to the library. They were on outing to go to the library. So the group ended up leaving without her, which I'm sure before this, it was like, we're going to do this, and then we're going to go to the library, and then we're going to come back and have lunch, or like, you know, how they kind of go over that stuff. And they were like, she's really upset, and we can't calm her down. And I'm like, yeah, because you told her she was going to the library. And then you sent her class and her teachers to the library without her, which I understand that they might have been on a time constraint with the van, with the library.
Anxiety has nothing to do with consequences, natural or not. It has nothing to do with it for our kids.
And even though we had to go and get her, so her dad went and got her, and she didn't want to go with him. She wanted to go to the effing library. I just wanted to be like, what don't you understand about this? Like, and there's nothing you can do to fix this unless you bring her to the library. Oh, you just have to let it get through it.
And she was upset. If Neil had brought her to the library, she didn't go with her class in the van like she's supposed to.
Yeah, was broken. Yeah, so they can't get her off. Because she's a puddle on the ground. They can't, you know, that she tried to leave the school. They had to physically barrier the door because she tried to keep going out the door. Like, which I don't know if in her mind she just thought the van was outside. They're like, and they've never seen this from her before. They're like, yeah, we had to physically block the door. And it's like, because she has a task in her mind.
She's going to the library.
That task has to be executed. And if that task can't be executed, then you have a real problem on your hands. Like, it's just, and she cannot understand, like, oh, you took too long in the bathroom, so they left. Like, that.
People think it's optional too. It's not an attitude problem. Alyssa's not trying to do this. This is like not a choice. It's happening to her.
So her school told me that if she starts something, even if it's like a pamphlet, like a booklet or whatever it is, they're like, Kaya cannot move past it until that page is done. And they're like, we've tried all which ways around it. Now we know we just have to let her finish the page. She can't move past it.
At all. Yeah.
And Alyssa's used to run into this when she did virtual speech, where she'd get upset and they'd be like, oh, okay, we'll just like, they'll try to end the session. And it's like, no, you can't end the session, because it's like, eventually she bounces back and then wants to finish the task. But like, obviously in a virtual speech appointment, you only have this set amount of time. They're like, oh, we can just do this another day. And like, I'm like, oh no, 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 no.
You think you're going to get away with speech therapy on a Thursday, you're mistaken.
We're just going to let her like get through this. And even like, she'll eventually come back and then she'll want to do it, because she knows that the expectation is for her to do X, Y, Z. So even if she's pissed off about it or upset about it, she needs to like be able to execute that. And when she's not able to execute that, I mean, you got like literally a tornado on your hands.
So this is the thing. If you want to treat anxiety, you either need to do as our kids say, or you can try things like cognitive behavioral therapies. There is acceptance and commitment therapy, which is like, you know, there's exposure therapies. You could do antidepressants or anti-anxiety medications. There's beta blockers. But basically, you have, you know, that rigmarole of choosing the right medication, getting it dialed in, hoping your hormones don't change or your kids don't grow taller or gain any weight and make the milligrams cockamamie.
Or you can be like Alyssa and blow out the candle. That helps her. She can do that now.
Yes.
Blow out the candle. And she goes.
So cute. I love that, like, Celie counting to 10 or doing deep breaths looks like my panic disorder. Like, it's like so extra. Anyway, there's obviously skills that you guys can listen back in all these other episodes. We talk about anxiety almost as much as we talk about autism, because it's just so intertwined. But I'm glad that we were able to give you kind of a synopsis of the whole deal. We stand in solidarity, moms, dads, all of our listeners, the therapists, and everybody for this post. We always post our episodes on social media. If you have a tip or a trick or some sort of new fandangled autism thing that isn't mushrooms on the Instagram or some stupid vitamins and essential oils, we are more than happy to hear about them. Please comment. Before we go, let's have an opportunity for one last thing. Anybody have a hot burner, hot topic burning?
I have nothing or shattering. It's really not a one last thing. It's just like a little shout out to the volleyball team of teenager boys. They're at their hotel this weekend for my daughter's birthday. We're in the pool and about 50 to 75, and I'm not exaggerating, teenage boys descended upon this area. My daughter was very happy.
I was like, this is my dream.
Oh my God. She was just in the pool stimming her little heart out. She was so happy. A lot of them stayed in the workout room and they were working out. But I'd have to say to those parents, who I'm sure probably are not listening, however, you know, you never know who it's going to reach. The nicest, most polite, their language wasn't like slinging all over the pool. They were careful not to hit the kids in the pool. They watched. One of the little boys that was at Kaya's party is autistic. And one of the kids, and I have to say this kid was 17. Kashton really took a liking to this boy to play catch. And this kid played with him for an hour and a half. Aww. He chased around the stuff. They went in the water. They went down the slide together. The kid just gave him the attention that he wanted. So I thought those parents, I don't know if it's a sports training, but they were some nice kids to our children in that pool.
I love that. Thank you, Siri Boys Volleyball.
And also, I was really glad they were on our floor, because when we were screaming in the middle of the night, nobody cared. And it didn't matter. That's my one last thing. Feel good moment.
Well, today was day one on my diet and I failed.
Oh. Day will start tomorrow.
I had a really bad headache, and then Neil bought me cupcakes and two candy bars. So I'm like, well, I guess the diet will start again tomorrow.
It happened. I'm eating jelly beans.
I tried.
One last thing. If you're the patient that got the last goddamn vaccination this morning or this afternoon, suck it. That's my aunties.
Some 9-year-old out there taking the last. How dare you?
Sorry.
And also check before we come in, just to let me know, you know. Other than that, I don't really know. I have a lot of things that I'm a little irked about, but I don't feel like ranting right now because I'm going to work myself up about it. But maybe next week.
I'll come back to you next week.
Gonna hold it in for a week. It's going to really let it go on Monday.
My one last thing is I, because of Jamie Ramos, have gotten into more reading, which was my 40th year goal. So I'm there. I'm doing it mainly because of Jamie and Harry Potter and the book club and Jamie. But I think I mentioned recently that I was reading Finding Margaret Fuller, which was extraordinary. Well, I was like so deep into this book. I ordered Rebel Wilson's book that just came out this week called, Rebel Rising. I keep switching it up. Anyway, it's called Rebel Rising. It is fantastic. I'm like underlining in all sorts of colors and flipping pages. I mean, it's very good. I just love a story of like.
That's why she's all over the.
Oh my God, I love her so much.
Lots about her lately. I'm like, now it makes sense why.
Mm-hmm. And then like, you know, every chapter I'm loving her more. So that's what's happening over here. I'm sad that I didn't buy this audiobook because she's Australian. That was a real missed opportunity.
Rachel loves Australian.
I love an accent.
I'll tell you right now. She loves it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I can't remember what we were talking about. And you're like, Australian, an Australian accent.
Have a great day, everyone. Thanks for being here and listening. Bye.
Bye. Hope this doesn't make you anxious.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Talk Like a Mother Parenting Autism podcast. If you are enjoying our podcast, make sure to rate and review us wherever you listen. And if you'd like to support us, you can become a subscriber. Just check out the description of this episode. Give us a follow on Facebook and Instagram for more content, and we'll see you next time.